This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague and friend Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We attend immediately to the sound of threat. That is the Islamic Republic of Iran launching its surrogates against the ally, the State of Israel, then launching 180 ballistic missiles against Tel Aviv to kill civilians. The interceptions left Israel with decision-making about responding to Iran. In the meantime, Hezbollah, one of the surrogates directly relating to orders given from Tehran, continues to fire its missiles into Israel. These last hours, many, maybe more than 100, directed at Haifa, the port city in northern Israel. Damaged, but no casualties reported, no KIA casualties reported as of yet. In any event, the story is, what is Israel going to do to respond to Iran's ballistic missile barrage? I welcome Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. Gregory, Iran is said to have a suspect nuclear weapons program. Iran is said to be intending to destroy the State of Israel. Iran has, to our knowledge, the capability of creating fissile material to make a bomb and weaponize eventually. What we have from the White House is the recommendation by the President of the United States not to bomb the Iranian suspect nuclear weapons program. Why not, Gregory? What's the White House thinking? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the White House is probably thinking what they dare not say, which is that Iran already has a multi-layered nuclear weapons capability. They've had in their possession since 1991 actual nuclear warheads and nuclear weapons. They subsequently developed and produced their own nuclear weapons design in concert with the North Koreans. And that was well over a decade ago, as we reported recently. We republished a number of articles, including one particularly good one by our late colleague, Yosef Badansky, Sefi Badansky, which was absolutely detailed. And that was backed up by a lot of hard evidence showing how Iran in 1991 acquired its first three nuclear weapons from Kazakhstan, ex-Soviet stocks, in pieces, and they were shipped across the Caspian from Kazakhstan to Iran. They subsequently acquired several, I believe at least three, nuclear weapons from ex-Soviet stocks in Ukraine, our current allies, and they've subsequently acquired more and more on the black market. Bearing in mind that the Russian post-Soviet government admitted that there were about 1,000 Soviet nuclear warheads which were missing from their inventory after the collapse of the Soviet Union. So there's a wish not on Washington's part not to provoke Iran into attacking nuclear research capabilities, because the nuclear weapons are themselves already deployed. A lot of them, I think, on mobile launchers and probably some on aircraft as well. They have a sophisticated command and control system, which is linked through fiber optic cables deeply buried. It's an identical command and control system to North Korea. So basically, you don't want to provoke the clerics into thinking that this is they're going down and they'll take everyone with them by giving an order to the Pashtun or the Revolutionary Guard to fire off those missiles. Frankly, the Revolutionary Guard has been very cautious about announcing or displaying any nuclear capability, because they understand that if they launch a first strike against Israel, then Israel will destroy much of Iran in a retaliatory strike. And both Israel and Iran have launch through warning capabilities. They also have second strike capability, which means that they can take the brunt of a first strike and still have enough weapons to go on a second strike. So basically, I think we are looking at a situation where Washington, which is aware of the real facts, does not want to provoke that. And frankly, I think Israel itself does not want to provoke that. So Israel is looking not at a strike against nuclear targets, which the war party in Washington would love to see on Capitol Hill and in the media, but rather doing something much more profound which is to consistently humiliate the clerical leadership, including Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, so that their rule collapses in the face of popular discontent. So constantly destroying his Hezbollah capability, which is an Iranian surrogate coming out of Lebanon, is first on the list because Hezbollah does pose a present and immediate danger. It's also not ruled out that Israel could attack some sites in Iran. And the Iranian government, which is very much aware of this overall situation, has decided to close down temporarily and evacuate all the workers from the Karg Island facility, which is the principal Iranian oil refining and shipping facility on Karg Island in the Persian Gulf. So if Israel decides to take out Karg Island's facilities with conventional weapons, that would absolutely cripple the Iranian economy. That might be a last resort for Israel if they can continue to see the degradation of Hezbollah and embarrassment of the clerics to such a degree that either the Iranian armed forces, not the Revolutionary Guard, but the armed forces, take over the government, or if the Russians actually support the armed forces in such an endeavor to bring about a new government in Iran. So it's going to be a really interesting period, and there's no evidence that that this is understood in the current presidential race in the United States, because quite clearly Vice President Harris knows nothing about the Iranian situation, neither the history nor the nuclear program. So it's going to be a very interesting time. The Israelis are using their counsel wisely. They have now, as we've been discussing earlier, have been moving more and more troops into Lebanon against Hezbollah. Right. I would say that with the new division, they've got probably 3 to 4 divisions, probably 30 to 50,000 ground force troops, quite apart from the air power they're using against Hezbollah.
I want to look at other capitals and their opinion of this present moment. Moscow is important here. As you say, this is Central Asia. Moscow's bailiwick for many decades and now in contest with China and other players. What does Moscow make of Iran's status? You say the army, the Moscow might support the IRGC if it moves against the clerics. Is that correct?
No, Russia might support the armed forces if they move against the clerics, which would mean that they would also have to move against the IRGC, because the IRGC is loyal to the clerical government to the degree that we're aware. So basically, the Russians have been trying to stop the clerics from doing anything rash which would invite a major military strike against Iran. Russia needs the geography of Iran to complete its access to the Indian Ocean, the warm waters. They've got the international north-south corridor, which we've discussed, going from St. Petersburg down to Bandar Abbas, in other words, across Iran to link up with India. So Russia does not want anything to disturb this incredible strategic advance which it made recently.
And then Beijing. Beijing has many, many problems. I understand that. But does it have an opinion of Iran and its status, given the $400 billion deal signed a couple of years ago, and depending upon the oil, the cheap oil, as China does it have an opinion of the clerics?
It's mutual distrust between the clerics and the Communist Party of China. The new president of Iran basically called out Beijing recently by saying that Beijing had not delivered on 1 cent's worth of the $400 billion promised aid and trade commitment, and Tehran called on Beijing to actually start operating on that. Beijing can't afford to do it. It doesn't have anything like the $400 billion over the next 3 or 4 years to invest. So essentially, yes, Iran needs the Chinese oil trade, but it's almost secondary choice. China's influence over Tehran has diminished dramatically.
The other two regional powers, let's begin with Delhi. Does it have an opinion of the Iranian conduct or the risk to all of South Asia?
Yes, well, New Delhi wants a stable Iran with or without the clerics so that it can complete that international north-south transport corridor and its links with Moscow, which is its great strategic safeguard in the post-China era coming up. So India basically will work with Moscow on that.
And Ankara, Istanbul, Ankara, Erdogan, who punches way above his weight. Does he have an opinion of Iran? I remember there's been friction on and off over the years.
Yes, Iran and Turkey remain highly competitive, and President Erdogan in Turkey is, as we said in our recent report, actively working on his own nuclear weapons program in order to take the place of Iran should the clerics collapse.
And the presumption then is that this will be a limited exchange between Israel and Iran, everybody watching very carefully. Are the clerics aware that they're unpopular in their own Eurasia? Do they know that if they make a wrong move, they'll be removed?
Absolutely aware of it. In fact, the words going around the Iranian community at home and abroad is that they want to see how many light lampposts there are throughout Iran because they want one lamppost for every cleric to be hanged from.
I see. And then the Hezbollah continued attacks on Israel. Iran has lost its insurance agent in the Middle East. Iran was always threatening to turn loose Hezbollah. They've lost that card. What do they have left, Gregory?
Well, they have very little left, which is why the debate is how do you get the Iranian domestic population mobilized against the clerics. Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, promised to do that. He urged the Iranian population to take matters into their own hands and reminded them of the long-standing, millennia-old relationship between Israel and the Jews and Iran. And so he's pushing on that front. He's also urged the Lebanese people to say, now you have the opportunity to seize back Lebanon for yourselves instead of being held prisoner by Hezbollah, which is the biggest armed movement in the country. And so that may have resonated with the Lebanese armed forces themselves, but it certainly has received positive comments from a number of non-Shia Lebanese people.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Ramstein, Germany. I'm John Batchelor.